Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Thank you very much for being here. I want to go over the agenda today because we do have some changes. Regarding at the very bottom, the work session that's scheduled for today, SB 384, will not be worked today as a work session. I've asked the interested parties to continue to work on that, and so that will be rescheduled for a work session in the future. Our agenda for what we're going to do as to taking bills, we'll take Senate Bill 3 first, then we're going to drop down and do House Bill 2372, and then House Bill 2380, and then we'll go back to the top of the agenda. So with that, why don't we go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 3. And Jeff, why don't you give us the best overview you can give us with the PSU band behind us.
Senator Brzozinski, members of the committee, Senate Bill 3 comes to us from President Courtney. The bill creates the crime of endangering a person protected by a Family Abuse Prevention Act restraining order, and a person commits the crime by engaging in prohibited conduct which recklessly creates a substantial risk of physical injury or intentionally places a protected person in fear of imminent physical injury. The crime is classified as a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum of 5 years prison or a $125,000 fine. We also have Dash 1 amendments before us, and the amendment specifies that a person commits the crime by having violated the order two or more times, and rather than making the crime a Class C felony, the amendment makes it a Class A misdemeanor, punishable by 1 year in jail and a $6,250 fine. There's no revenue impact. We're still waiting on the fiscal.
All right. So, President Courtney, you're here. I'm wondering if you wanted to have the floor to yourself, or can I bring two other people up with you? So, with President Courtney, Dinah, want you and Sybil, want you to please come up. I have you all three listed. While they're coming up, is there anyone else that will want to give testimony today on Senate Bill 3? All right. Mr. President, when you're ready. And I think I wish we might be able to get the Vikings to turn down their sound a little bit, so you may need to make certain you're speaking loud enough for the mics.
Thank you, Chair Brzozinski, Vice Chair Cruz, Senator Gelser, Senator Burdick, Senator Thatcher, members of the August Senate Judiciary Committee. My name is Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator, and my district includes it's District 11, including Salem, Jervis, and Woodburn, and I live in Salem. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 3. The measure, as has been indicated by your learned and high staff or counsel, increases the punishment for breaking a family abuse prevention restraining order if there is a clear risk of physical injury to a Class C felony, punishable up to 5 years imprisonment, and also or a $125,000 fine. I believe that I like to give testimony that's official as well as to present copies of my materials out of respect for the committees that I go before. So I am going to try to be factual. So this isn't going to take long, but I am going to just read the following of the record. On July 21st, 2014, Cassandra Wagner filed a restraining order against her ex-boyfriend, Jason Down. 40 days later, she was dead. On August 4th, Down violated that restraining order and was given a 90-day probation. He was then released on work release on August 17th. On August 30th, 2014, according to police, he shot and killed Cassandra Wagner. In August, Jessica Carson, of Portland, filed a restraining order against her husband, Joshua Covet, after severe beatings and threats of torture. In October, Jessica was dead, shot by Joshua in front of her daughters, age 2 and 5. In November, a custody battle ended in the murder of Nicolette Elias, the kidnapping of two children, ages 8 and 9, and the suicide of Ian Elias. This came less than a year after Nicoletta obtained a restraining order against her ex-husband. In July, Ian had been charged with contempt of court for continued harassment on social media sites. But before he could be charged, it was already too late. Our research shows, starting in August, we are facing a domestic violence death nearly once a month in our state. Many of these cases involve active restraining orders. Last year, 557 people applied for restraining orders in Marin County. It's my county right here. There were 362 violations. Every single one of those violations was at most a misdemeanor and at least a contempt of court charge. We need to change this. Judges' hands are presently tied. The law lets dangerous violators walk away with nothing more than a contempt of court charge. We must give judges the discretion to hear and consider restraining order violations as a serious crimes, as they are. And like it goes on, and I'm going to stop there. So what we're seeing basically is that it's very tragic. Not all the domestic violence death we're talking about result of violation of restraining order, but a good percentage of them were. And right now, that is not considered that serious of a crime. And so to put someone behind bars for a period of time, which maybe if they are behind bars for a period of time, they will work things out enough that they will not think of such things as killing their ex-girlfriend or their former wife, etc. So that's why the bill was brought to you. I did not go looking for this bill. I was actually in Silverton at a major family reunion, and when the day that really something bad went down this summer in Mount Angel, and we kept getting police reports during the our family reunion because my wife's family sort of pays attention to that kind of thing. And so we were being reports that something bad had gone on down because many of my wife's relatives live in Mount Angel. In fact, it was almost right across the street that day that happened. And so I started to become really aware of what was going on. Then there was a flurry of these things. So this is the bill. That's what it tries to do. And, of course, we have Leonard and Height, experts here, can talk about it. This great committee can think about it, decide whether or not collectively you think it should be something we deal with in this fashion. So I thank you for letting me come here today and testify on it.
Thank you. Senator Courtney, do you need to take care of other Senate business?
Well, I can stay just for the remainder of their testimony unless you want me to leave, because I know I have a time limit on me. I know this committee says they want me in the room as very little as possible. I understand that, Your Honor.
I'd like for you to stay all day, but I understand you also have other chores to do. So did you want questions now, or do you want to wait till the rest of the panel?
Why don't we let them go first? How about that? I'm just in deference to them. Why don't you just let them go first?
I know.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Dinah Vittelins, and I'm here as Crook County District Attorney today and testifying in support of the Dash 1 amendments. And basically the reason is this. The Oregon District Attorneys Association is split on the issue of whether to keep restraining order violations as contempts or crime. And the reason for this is in a place such as Multnomah County, contempt of court cases are scheduled much more quickly than the underlying criminal case, and so they can hold offenders accountable quickly with court-appointed counsel but no jury trial. So they have what's called a rocket docket, where they regularly hold offenders who violate restraining orders accountable and fairly quickly. On the other hand, people who live in Crook County have more time. We don't have the ability to get people in quickly and hold them accountable quickly. So I support this blended approach where the first violation of a restraining order would continue to be a contempt. The second violation against the same victim would essentially be a Class A misdemeanor. And so that, we believe, would be able to keep that Multnomah County system in place, as well as starting to hold the offender accountable if they violate the restraining order against the same victim, and building that criminal history score so that they can then be imprisoned if the activity continues. Thank you.
Bill?
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here today. I really appreciate the attention of the President and the Council and Committee in paying attention to this issue. It's a great, important issue. We're supportive from the Law Center's perspective of removing barriers to safety for victims of domestic and sexual violence. It's a huge public health and safety issue, as the good President just testified. In our state, it's affecting many, many individuals, as well as their children and extended families and communities. And so we're concerned about violations of restraining orders and believe in it, that violations are an indicator of lethality and of greater danger, and that's acknowledged nationally. And questions about whether or not restraining orders have been violated in the past is a common question that is that exists on lethality assessment tools that law enforcement and judges and others use in communities across the nation. So it's a really important issue that there be consistent and effective accountability when there are those violations, and we support the efforts of the President and the committee in finding a way forward there. I defer to others who have more expertise about how different proposals work with respect to different court systems. That's not my expertise, but I'm very much supportive of greater accountability and appreciate the attention.
Thanks. Thank you. Questions for the President or any of our panel?
Mr. Chair, just a comment. All these tragic incidents that you mentioned, Senator Courtney, involve the use of a firearm, and they all appear to involve the use of a firearm by someone who is not legally able to have them. And so I think this is a good step forward, but until we can find a better way to keep the guns away from these people, we're going to continue to have fatalities.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Question, Dinah, you may be best on the panel to answer this. I know in the courts that I practice in, specifically in Florence, there's usually a no-contact order issued for an individual that's on a release agreement. I know that judge, he makes it very, very clear that if you violate and have contact with the victim, you're going to be in jail. And he does it. I mean, he puts them in there, and they just sit there if there's a violation until we go to court. And I'm assuming around the state that is that a fair representation of how these type of violations occur, in the sense of breaking them away from having the opportunity to have more, let's say, unfortunate contact?
Chair Pozanski, you are right. In terms of the difference in on a release agreement or the restraining order, if they're violated, judges tend to hold people in jail if it's possible. In a place like Crook County, we don't have jail beds, and so those individuals are regularly released. And it's also part of the power and control of batterers that if they are released, then intimidating the victim again is important to them.
Right. So I guess, you know, to me, that part of this is making certain the full system is working together. And I understand resources are limited in many places, but it does seem to me that, and some people, and in fact, victims ask me, you know, how are you going to keep them from coming back at me? And it's one of those things I say, you know, there's going to be an order that says you can't do this. And if he does do it, I expect this court to hold them accountable, but we also understand that that piece of paper isn't going to necessarily keep someone from doing it. So it's unfortunate that to hear, and I'm not saying your county or whatever counties, that doesn't have the resources to actually have that full force of being able to, let's say, isolate them out so there isn't going to be that safety risk. I know that's more of a comment. Any other statements or comments to be said? Thank you all very much for coming forward. Again, I'm going to ask if anyone else would like to give testimony today on Senate Bill 3. So my understanding is we are waiting for paperwork to catch up on the Dash 1s, and so when we have all that, we will look at getting this rescheduled for a work session. So with that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 3, and I believe we're now going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2372.
Senator Pozanski, members of the committee, House Bill 2372 comes to us at the request of the House Interim Committee on Judiciary. The bill is a technical fix, and it requires certification by the Department of Safety Standards and Training rather than the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training before a police officer may request a urine test and a DUI investigation. The Board on Public Safety Standards and Training no longer exists. The bill declares an emergency and is effective on passage. There's no revenue and no fiscal impact, and the bill is ready to move today.
All right. So for clarification, this is basically an administrative bill that's just changing the name that's in the statute from board to Department of Public Standards Safety, blah, 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 DPSST.
Correct.
And the most important bill of the session.
I'm looking for, okay, it looks like Eric's, you're here, and then you have Cheryl. Y'all two would please come forward. Company of music just here. All right. No dancing, please.
Do you select the songs as it comes up? Or
I was going to do the jukebox. But I know, you know, most people down there probably don't know what a jukebox is, so I'm dating myself.
I know.
I said down
okay.
there.
Oh, down there. Okay. Yeah.
Cheryl, did you want to start off?
Sure. Chair Pruzanski, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Heemstra. I'm an Assistant Attorney General at the Oregon Department of Justice, here today on House Bill 2372. Highly technical fix. There was one case out of Columbia County where a judge threw out an implied consent Dewey case because the officer was certified by the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, not the board, as was written in the statute. So we're just making that very small fix today.
Chair Pruzanski, members of the committee, Eric Skablicz, Director of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. You couldn't sum it up any better. The one clarification I'll make, though, is the board still exists, but the board is the one that sets the standards. The department's the one that issues the certificate. So this is truly an administrative glitch that nobody saw coming, and now we're here to ask you to help fix it.
All right. Questions for our panel? All right. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. Why don't y'all just hang on for 1 second. And this one's ready to go. So, Senator Cruz, will you make a motion on?
Not until you go into work session.
All right. Work session. House Bill 2372.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2372 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2372 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And let's see. Senator Thatcher, will you carry 2372 to the floor, please?
Happily.
Okay, we'll close that work session. And Eric, you can step back because I don't think you're going to be on the next one, but Cheryl, I didn't want you to have to walk around and come back. So we're now opening up a public hearing on House Bill 2380.
Senator Pruzanski, members of the committee, House Bill 2380 comes to us at the request of the Attorney General's Office. The bill allows a court in a post-conviction relief proceeding upon joint motion of the parties to vacate a judgment and order and remand the proceeding to circuit court to reconsider the judgment and order. The bill additionally gives jurisdiction to the circuit court to enter the revised judgment and or order upon remand. The bill has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact and is ready to move today.
All right, Cheryl.
Thank you, Chair Pruzanski, members of the committee. House Bill 2380 follows a line of legislation starting back in 2007. As you know, the Department of Justice deals with all appellate cases where the state is a party. Currently in criminal cases and in juvenile cases, there's a mechanism where if both parties agree, they can file a joint motion for remand in the appellate court. This saves time for the department, defense, and the courts. We are asking for a similar mechanism for post-conviction relief cases and to save everybody time, money, and resources. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
All right. Questions?
Pretty simple.
All righty. I don't see any questions, so let me ask if there's anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2380. Not seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearing and we'll open up a work session on House Bill 2380.
Chair, I move House Bill 2380 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2380 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And let's see. Senator Cruz, why don't you carry this one if you'd be so kind? We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 2380. Cheryl, thank you very much.
And now we're changing counsel, and as counsel is changing, I'm going to go ahead and gavel in a public hearing on House Bill, excuse me, Senate Bill 364. Eric's trying to get in his seat there.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, Senate Bill 364 comes to this committee from the Senate Interim Judiciary Committee. In 2013, the Oregon Legislature passed Senate Bill 40, which reclassified marijuana offenses effective July 1st of 2013. Senate Bill 364 requires the court to consider these new classification of marijuana offenses when considering an expungement, regardless of when the conduct occurred. This permits offenders who committed marijuana offenses prior to the passage of Senate Bill 40 to use that new classification in seeking an expungement. The bill also reinstates a provision of ORS 161.705 that previously permitted Class B felony possession offenses to be reduced to misdemeanors. The Dash 2 amendment clarifies the date to be used in classifying the offense. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
And it's ready to move.
It's ready to move.
Okay. I have Gail Myers. Please come forward. And as Gail's coming forward, is there anyone else who will want to give testimony on Senate Bill 364? Gail?
Thank you. Senator Przanski, members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I will be addressing my comments towards the Dash 2. It replaces the bill, and it is the entity that we hope to move forward. This is a technical fix of a technical fix, and if there's any just God up there that instructs punishment on lobbyists for screwing up the first time, I'm now suffering that because explaining the fix to the fix is more difficult than the first time around. In 2013, we sponsored Senate Bill 40, and what that did was hope to align marijuana classification felony levels because they were out of skew and balance. Marijuana had been declassified from a Schedule 1 drug to a Schedule 2 drug, but our criminal code hadn't caught up. So in Senate Bill 40 of last session, we moved certain A conduct down to Schedule B and B conduct down to Schedule C. And that small adjustment down to B and C was important because it allowed people with existing and old marijuana convictions to be eligible to have them expunged. A felonies can never be expunged, so to move it to a B, they'd be eligible within 20 years, and then B's down to C's. C's can be eligible to expunge in 3 years. So that was all well and good. There was no objection to that. Bill was moving. Unfortunately, the bill attracted other attention because of its relating to clause, got amended in many ways by other provisions, and in the process, the entire bill was scheduled to be prospective only, and that really defeated the purpose of our bill originally, which was to allow people to go in to get these things set aside. So, on the Dash 2 amendment, starting at line 3, it clarifies that the court, when considering a motion to set aside a conviction, shall consider the felony classification level on the day Senate Bill 40 went into effect. We had to choose a specific date because, what do you know, now ballot measure 91 has come along and has decriminalized certain conduct, and we don't want to get into that. So we're using July 1. That's the first fix. Second fix is what happened was there's a statute out there. It's a great statute. It allows for a court to enter a judgment of a misdemeanor even if certain conduct is a felony, and it had in there a provision for a B felony possession count. That was pulled out of there by Senate Bill 40 because Senate Bill 40 got rid of B felony possessions. And at first we thought that made sense, but now we realize people with existing old B felony possessions still want to use that statute because they may not want to wait 20 years to get an expungement, but they want to be able to at least get it. They may not be eligible to get it set aside, but they want to be at least be able to reduce it to a misdemeanor. So we're simply inserting something that was there that shouldn't have been taken out the first time. Good news is this. I've shared all this language, all this talk with the District Attorneys Association. They're neutral. I know of no problems.
Senator Cruz.
I noticed this time you have a slightly more narrow relating clause on the bill.
Thank you, Senator. I want to say I very much appreciate Senator Przanski's and Cruz's amendments to the Senate Bill 40. They were great amendments. I simply lost control of what was going on near the end of it, and it things happened that didn't comport with our original intent. So, yeah.
Okay. Any questions for Gail? Senator Thatcher.
Any pushback from anybody? I know that you said that the DAs were neutral on it, but is anybody out saying that gee, this just can't be.
Senator Pozanski, Senator Thatcher, no. We had those original discussions in 13 with respect to the policy issues. I think everybody understands this is a fix-it to make sure that the policy that was originally addressed in 13 actually is the way the statutes read. We're catching up to the policy decisions that were made in 13. So the answer is no. No pushback.
Are we ready on this?
We're ready with the dash twos.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
And we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 364. We're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 364.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 364.
Senator Cruz moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 364. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 364 as amended by the dash two amendment to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 364 as amended by the dash two amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
This is actually discussion. What we thought we did last session. So.
Any objections?
I'm being talked in my ear. Hang on.
Cautious.
Discussion?
Yeah, I just want to be a little cautious on that one. I just need to, because I think it was a no on the underlying bill, so that's why I'm just hesitating a little bit. So.
Objection, please note that.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I would suggest that the underlying bill became a whole lot more than the original bill. So.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay. All right, then never mind. I'm good.
All right, so I'm going to ask once again, just for the record, is any objection to the motion before us?
No.
All right, with that, so ordered. Now, Senator Burnick, now that you're one of our marijuana gurus, I was going to see if you wanted this, but if you don't want it, I'll take it and you'll get something else.
Mr. Chair, I will defer to you since you did the original.
All right.
Thank you for the opportunity.
It's my pleasure. Chair Ricari, 364. We'll close the work session on 364. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2335.
Chair Pozanski, members of the committee, House Bill 2335 comes to this committee from the House Interim Judiciary Committee. ORS 164.205 defines when a person enters or remains unlawfully for purposes of the trespass and burglary statutes. Subsection A states that a person enters or remains unlawfully when premises are not open to the public or the entrance is not otherwise licensed or privileged to do so. In 1981, the Oregon Supreme Court decided the case of State v. Hartfield and held that the Oregon legislature intended that or to be an and. For 34 years, that's been the interpretation in the Oregon courts. This bill would modify the statute to catch up with that judicial interpretation. It passed the House with 55 yes votes and 5 excused. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Dave, so you're here with us today. Please come forward.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, he's getting set. Is there anyone else who want to give testimony on House Bill 2335? Dave, lead us off.
Chairman Pozanski, members of the committee, my name is David Amesbury. I'm here on behalf of the Uniform Criminal Jury Instruction Committee of the Oregon State Bar. The bill is pretty much as it was described to you by counsel. This is an old issue from 1981. It makes sense if you think about it that if you're allowed to be someplace and you have a license to be there, then it doesn't really matter whether it's open to the public or not. And so you really, the state has always since 81 had to prove that you weren't allowed to be there and that it wasn't open to the public before you could be found to be guilty of being in a place where you weren't permitted to be. Ordinarily, a Supreme Court decision would fix that. However, even as recently as last year, there was a case where this issue was raised on appeal. The Court of Appeals did not reach the issue because it found a harmless error, found the lack of giving an instruction that or means and was a harmless error. If there are appellate cases that are still occurring in 2014, then you can be assured that this is something that occurs with probably distressing regularity in the trial courts and probably an issue that's constantly being hashed out until somebody drags out the whole case and modified instruction is given. We looked at the issue of trying to give an instruction that would address this. But really, it makes most sense to change the statute to accommodate what the Supreme Court has already decided.
Great.
Thank you. Discussion? Questions? Dave, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2335 and open a work session on House Bill 2335.
Chair, I move House Bill 2335 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2335 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Burdick, I'll give you this one. How's that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, so now we're going to go ahead and close the work session on 2335, open up a public hearing on House Bill 2433.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, House Bill 2433 comes to this committee from the Office of the Governor at the request of the Oregon State Police. The bill modifies existing requirements for electronic citations. The bill would permit the use of electronic citations that are in a different size and format than current uniform citations, so long as the electronic citation contains all of the same information that a uniform citation contains. The bill passed the House with 58 yes votes and 2 excused. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
So with my eyes, I'm looking, I see 2 bars. I'm going to say, Captain Anderson, will you join us, please?
Thank you and good morning.
Good morning.
I'm just noting that I can fit into this chair with the gun belt. When I don't, then I know I've got a problem. So good morning, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Anderson, and I am a captain with the Oregon State Police Patrol Division. I'm here testifying in support of House Bill 2433. In summary, this bill amends some formatting issues involved with the electronic filing of citations, both violation and criminal citations. To give a little history, it was in 1995 that the legislature first passed legislation allowing for the electronic filing of violation citations. That became ORS 153770. In 2005, the legislature revisited this and again passed legislation allowing the electronic filing of criminal citations. That became ORS 133073. As of today, there are at least 37 law enforcement agencies across Oregon that are filing their citations electronically. Every circuit court in the state is set up to receive and is receiving citations electronically, and 28 justice courts are receiving their citations electronically. This process has led to a great many efficiencies, not only for law enforcement, but for the courts and even the individuals receiving the citation. The issue before us today is really a formatting and size issue. Supreme Court order sets out the information, size, and formatting requirements of uniform citations. That order is then adopted into statute. And while both of the statutes within this bill require that the electronically filed citations contain all of the information required within the Supreme Court order, neither statute provides an exemption for electronically filed citations to be of a different size or format than a regular handwritten citation. For instance, the Supreme Court order says that uniform citations must be 5 inches wide and 8 inches in length, while a printed electronic citation is 4 inches wide and 22 inches in length. This minor discrepancies has led to a few successful challenges in court that have quashed some citations in one Oregon county. And this bill will fix that and continue the efficiencies that have been realized through electronic filing. So that concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, any questions?
Dang, that's what I could have challenged, huh? No, I was kidding.
Yeah. I was going to say next time, but there won't be a next time.
Right? It's not. Conflict of interest, no.
Mr. Chair, we did get at the dais this letter from Attorney Charles Lee in Roseburg, who at one point ran against me.
Who we both know very well.
Okay. I'm just wondering if there's validity in his issues there. Basically he's looking at the date of effectiveness and the emergency clause and things like that. So I was wondering, is an emergency clause actually necessary on this?
That would be a policy decision for the committee to make. I don't think that we can apply retroactively to conduct that occurred before the implementation of the bill, but going forward for people who receive citations once the bill becomes effective.
Okay. Well, that seemed to be his concern, was the retroactivity of it. So, but if it's not retroactive, then it is what it is. I guess he was kind of wondering if the courts needed some time to adjust to what was coming, I guess. So
the courts are already getting these right now.
Okay.
The question is, are they technically correct under the statute? And what we know,
okay,
they're not.
Okay.
And so the question about going back in time, I mean, you know, that's pretty interesting, because, I mean, an officer in this case, or the prosecutor, could in fact dismiss and refile within the statute of limitations,
okay,
and you can actually have a valid citation now being filed. I have not looked at Charles' letters and testimony, so I'm not sure. I'm fine with just moving forward and just having it being perspective, but I don't see anything technically, even in the bill, that would keep someone from dismissing, refiling if they're within the 6 months on a violation.
It doesn't address that. And I know his concern is for people who've already engaged in the conduct and received the citation on the form that's been testified about, that when this becomes effective, they will, if they go to court, won't be able to challenge that format issue for conduct that occurred before. This bill would make it effective immediately upon passage. I don't think the bill addresses specifically how the courts would interpret whether that meant the previous conduct or, in other words, I don't think the bill addresses Mr. Lee's specific question.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, because we both know him. It's his concern, basically, the fact that currently there's a loophole, and this would take away the loophole?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then let's move the damn bill.
All right. Captain, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. So that's going to be on the video for sure. All right. And let me ask if there's anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 2433.
Mr. Chair, I'm just glad that I finally got clarity on this thing.
All right.
So.
The vision's there. All right. Not seeing anyone coming forward, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2433, and we're ready to go.
We are ready to move the bill.
Open a work session on House Bill 2433.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2433 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2433 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And as tempted as I am to either have Senator Cruz or myself carry this bill, Senator Gelser, will you be our carrier?
There's nothing that would make me happier.
All right. So Senator Gelser will be our carrier on 2433. We'll close the work session
easily
on that
pleased
bill. And so we've completed our work for the day and for the week. I just want to make certain Monday, I believe we're scheduled for 8:30. Jennifer, you can just please check that for us.
I believe it was 9, Mr.
I second that.
There isn't an agenda posted.
I don't have an agenda yet.
Oh, it's not up yet? I think it's 8:30. I saw. Okay. Please check the schedules. I do believe it's going to be 8:30.
Remember, it's going to feel like 7:30, right?
Is that this
weekend?
That's
oh, yeah. That's just spring forward for Sunday.
Oh, that's right.
So you can be ready for Monday.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
If you really need it, spring forward on Saturday.
Mr. Chair, my only concern at this point is if that's as happy as Senator Gelser can get, that she may need some. Senator Gelser can get that.